sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The S&P 500 is below its 50-day moving average. The Dow is down for the year. Is trouble in paradise or a buying opportunity? All this and much more on episode number 375 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, it's Andrew Horowitz here, and how are you? Hopefully you have had a great week. We have much of the equipment that has been put back in order. Yes, it is a miracle. Hopefully you can hear a difference in the studio sound today when you're listening. You'll hear a little bit more clarity, some better tonal and vocal quality. We had a little bit of a rough time when we were disassembling and reassembling to move to the new office. And unfortunately, at the same time, and it was not due to the fact that we were moving, not due to the fact of anything other than just a freak occurrence, one of our pieces of equipment went kaput. But fortunately, there are those people that are just magical and can fix things, because without fixing it, it's a pretty expensive piece of equipment. Anyway, I wanted to give a quick shout out. I don't usually do this, but there's a guy who helped me out today at the spur of a moment, needed a little help with something on my boat, and he gave a quick, hey, no problem, be right there. His name is Mike over from Family Values Moving, and he's a buddy of mine from down here, and he is one of those guys that really is has the ability to fix things, do things, and not only that, good friend can be out there helping. Hopefully you have somebody like that out there as well that can just drop what they're doing and help you out, and maybe you could do the same for them one day. Anyway, lots to talk about. There are many things that are colliding right now when it comes to markets. We have the fact that Argentina is defaulting, and depending on how and who says what, there'll be some controversy about that claim, whether or not there's actually a default, a selective default, a voluntary default, some kind of partial default. Who knows how they're going to frame it? But the fact is, of course, that one of the big things is they don't want to actually trigger those CDS, the insurance on the bonds of Argentina, because this is going to cost somebody a lot of money. And what happens is that we've seen this many times before. Remember all the times in Europe when we had Greece, and you know, we saw this happening throughout various parts of the European region when there was a inability for a government to pay. Well, the question was, is this a default or not? For the most part, it wasn't a default. And that turned out to be very helpful, because without the default, there was the ability for these countries to actually come in and restructure and do all sorts of funny things. The difference here is that this is the second time in 13 years or so that Argentina actually is defaulting on their debt. Is more of an underlying problem when it comes to Argentina right now. And the real question is going to be how quickly they can restructure and then convince the public and investors if they're going to be able to carry on and actually pay their next level of debt. Because when you get two times in a short period, there's a lot of questions that come in. Investors are no longer as excited about just buying in, because now you have a restructuring and now some of the debt is off the table and now there's a cleanup and all of a sudden there's a much better balance sheet overall. But now there is possibly an underlying problem with the structure of what this entity, and this being a government, is doing. A country is just not doing what they said, not holding up their end of the bargain 13 years after they had the last default. And when you look at this, I think that was really, if you really kind of break down all the things that are going on, let's just do a quick recap. We have trouble in Russia and Ukraine. We have the Middle East situation. We have earnings season. We have the Fed. The Fed cut back on their bond purchases again in their last meeting, now at, $25 billion, I believe, in monthly purchases, exactly what they said they were going to do. No change And in fact, there really wasn't a big change in their commentary when they came out last week with it. There was really, I didn't find that much of a difference, although there was some language in their commentary and their minutes that talked about how things were a little bit better in this area or in that area. And I think when you combine all the things that happened, we'll combine some of the earnings that happened, we'll combine some of the commentary from the Fed, we'll talk about, again, Ukraine, Middle East, and, of course, Argentina. It was just the straw that broke the camel's back because the S&P had one of the worst weeks it had in about 2 years. Its current price is under the 50-day moving average, between the 50 and the 200-day moving average. And oftentimes that 50-day moving average, as we know, time and time again, is a real good point for institutions to step in. They kind of will almost automatically, just without even any thought, come in and pick up at a 50-day moving average. You see that many stocks will bounce at that level. This time it couldn't. The selling pressure was much too high. We saw a very high volume day on Thursday. The markets across the board really sold off dramatically. And then on Friday, what you would have expected with a decent jobs report, we saw that the unemployment rate did rise ever so slightly to 6.2%. There was a little bit less than expected in terms of the actual number of new people put on the payrolls, but that in a perverse way is good for markets because the thought is, you know what? If in fact we did see a blowout number, this is an absolute incredible number when we're saying, I don't know, let's say a 5.8% unemployment rate and maybe 500,000 or 400,000 people put on the payrolls, that would have been like, oh my, the Fed is out. The Fed is going to raise rates quickly. They're going to really drop their quantitative easing program very, very quickly. And boy, that's going to really shock markets. Bonds probably would have been sold off like crazy because the reality was the Fed's no longer going to be as active as they were. But no, that wasn't the case. What happened was that we saw just a good number. Nothing wrong with the number that we saw. There was absolutely nothing wrong with the level that we saw on unemployment rate or on the new jobs added. But yet, markets still didn't like it very much. The overall theme of what's happening right now seems to be that there is a real big concern with regard to, kind of the longer term. I think what's happening now is that markets and investors are looking out into the future and saying, hey, you know what? You know, maybe it's a question of, we see the earnings. We see that, yeah, we did beat 67% of the stocks and the S&P have beaten earnings. But right now, things are valued a little bit too high considering all the things in the backdrop. Because remember, sentiment changes very quickly. And when negative sentiment comes into markets and all of a sudden there is a change in sentiment, it happens time and time again, kind of flips on a dime, just absolutely turns very quickly. And markets come down much quicker than they go up. You see that over time we've noticed that, hey, it's been this market that has been trudging higher and doing much better, kind of has a great resilience, a bouncing effect almost all the time. Buyers come in when things are down. But what happened and what changed over the last number of sessions? If you noticed and look at the chart of the S&P 500 as an example, and you track back the last however many days and weeks, you'll see that there was a slight change. And you really can only see this by looking backward. During the time it's occurring, it really isn't as evident. But you could see a slight change in how investors were reacting. There wasn't as much of a move to buy every single dip. As a matter of fact, it was quite the reverse, that they were selling every rip, about 2 weeks' worth. And that culminated in the program selling and the selling that we saw on Wednesday into Thursday and then back into Friday again. Now, there was a nice recovery on Friday. Markets did dip down pretty well, about 75, 80 basis points, and then came back pretty nicely towards the end of the day. That's a good sign that there is still some buyers out there. Now, if we are entering into a time of a correction, what you're probably going to see is some sharp downward moves. You're going to see some long candles with a lot of long wicks, meaning that instead of that very compressed level of movement where you see just a slight tick up each and every day, 20, 30 basis points, not a lot of upside, not a lot of downside, but a nice staircase and step up each and every day, what you're going to see now is that the candles or the high to the low, the range of the daily movement is going to expand dramatically. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that it's really time to go short, to get out of the market? Or, you know, what does it actually mean? Well, so far, the trend is still intact overall. There's a bit of a break here right now, clearly in small caps. No question about the fact that small caps have been suffering. The Dow is now down for the year. We know that. The S&P took back a few percent. But still, the S&P and large caps have, I would say, pretty much still been an uptrend with this one little glitch that we see here now. Now, here is the thing, that if, in fact, we do see continued large and long, wide candles, and if we have an inability to hold the market position and hold a reasonable amount of recovery from on a daily basis, so in other words, if we see that the market opens up a bit, and maybe it just kind of trends a little bit higher throughout the day, and all of a sudden it slams down on high volume, and by the end of the day, we do see that there is a high volume turn on the downside, well, then you're going to see that there's going to be some further skepticism that is being brought into the markets. And if that happens, and if in fact we do see that happening on a regular basis, I would say that if we have another move lower on a daily basis, maybe 2 or 3 days moving forward, now we have to start scratching our head and say, hey, you know what? This is maybe a sign that there is institutional distribution going on. And if there is that happening, you have to be aware that that means that there is probably some further downside. Now, how much? Well, that's a good question. Is it down to the 200-day moving average? Possibly. Is it going to be a very select group? Are we going to see that we continue to see the groups that Janet Yellen had talked about being the most overvalued continuing to outperform with good earnings and with M&A activity? We did see that the social media stocks, the Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, all came out with better than expected earnings. Now, of that list, I would say that clearly that LinkedIn and Facebook are the two favorites. Twitter, on the other hand, we tried on DH Unplugged to hit it on the short side at about 52.50 or so, just missed that short. I have to actually adjust that spreadsheet that we have. But that was a great time, about $52 in the after hours when Twitter came out with their earnings. That would have been a good sell, would have been a good shorting opportunity because there was just a lot of short squeeze that went on there. There was a lot of anticipation, excitement because the other stocks in the same genre, in the same sector did well. But you know what? Twitter, it just doesn't have the same bite. It doesn't have the same potential long-term advertising beneficiary. It is not the long-term beneficiary of advertising that you would see in like a Facebook or a LinkedIn. Those are much more used in a much different manner. We talked about this so many different times. But I got to tell you something. When I look at all the stocks that have been doing well in the biotech industry, we saw some of them just absolutely skyrocket and blow out earnings dramatically. You know, I don't know where I come back to this whole thing where Janet Yellen was just talking about this overvalued and really picking out sectors. I just don't understand what the Fed is trying to do. Why are they trying to get so granular with their commentary and proven wrong on this and therefore giving them a lack of credibility when it comes to their expectations and their analysis? The Fed, we know, has not really done a great job in terms of their plotting and charting the actual economy, the numbers on GDP, the numbers on on the overall strength of the economy. They have to readjust and adjust on a continual basis. That's not their strong point. Their strong point pretty much is just creating money out of thin air, just going out and doing their best to pump up the economy through excessive money and liquidity. Their analysis factors are pretty poor. Historically, we have seen that the Fed, no matter who is at the head, stays too long in any one position and makes the calls a little bit on the wrong side of things. Now, that being the case, they come out with this kind of analysis where they provide a very, very small and very focused look at a sector or sectors like the pharmaceuticals or the biotechs in the small cap area, as well as the area that we saw in the social media, and really spooked those stocks for a couple of weeks, a couple, 3 weeks. But they were wrong. They were wrong terribly. And that hits to their credibility pretty significantly. So when we're looking at the overall analysis by the Fed now, there's a lot of question that comes to play. We did see that GDP hit 4%. Now, why did the market still have a problem with that? What was going on there? And I think that the majority of the issue there was still all about the fact that it was really just a return and a pop from the previous, and we still see the underlying economy when it comes to jobs, it comes to also with the breakdown of some of the home numbers, the slowdown in home values, the slowdown in some of the pending home sales, the slowdown in the sales that we saw from like D.R. Horton. I mean, that's still showing that there really is a lot of slack in the economy. But the question still remains is the confidence level in the Fed, I think, has faded a little bit after their recent commentary and, you know, their discussion when it came to, the overall markets, particularly when the small caps, et cetera. Now, they were right about the small caps if they talk about just small caps, but I guess one out of three will hold them for a while. But nonetheless, I think this is, I think you agree too. They should probably stay out of that particular that particular venture. Doesn't make any sense for them to get involved in that whole thing. Now, I think we need to shift over for a second and talk about what's happening around the world. The whole idea of the ECB and their fight on deflation to fight and try to bring back the valuation and push into the markets the money in order to provide a significant amount of inflationary or asset-based price increase, not working. And this is something that's a real big concern for them. You know, one of the things that we've seen over time has been that when it comes to the ECB, there's a lot of talk they do. There's a lot of jawboning. But yet, at the same time, the most recent thing that they've done, the most recent level of overall they didn't go to quantitative easing, but the things they did to try to pump up the economy through negative interest rates, so far, not working. The latest inflationary numbers showed that they're still in a deflationary move, and they're kind of coming in, and pricing is coming down, and that really also spooked markets on top of some of the things that have been going on. That is not a real good commentary when it comes to the overall markets. Now, I think that when you look at Europe, we all know that Portugal, which we saw that their banking sector continued to have problems recently. We saw that when it came to Spain, the high unemployment rate, and the fact that in Germany, they're being very affected by all the things that are going on in Russia. This is a big problem because the amount of exports that they do, the amount of business that the larger regions in Europe have and the exposure they have to Russia is a real big problem. Where do we go? What do we do? Do we stay away? Absolutely. This is not an area that you want to pile into right now. This is not an area that you want to have a tremendous exposure. And you can see that what's going on recently is that institutions and hedge funds and the big players are actually moving money out of those regions. And that being the case, that is not something that you want to fight. You know, we talk about the trend all the time. You know, what is the whole point of the trend? The whole point right now that you need to realize, and something we need to get back to, is that, you know, you could ride the trend, but who makes up the trend? Who is it that is the trend? Is it the retail investors? No, it's not. It's the institutions. It's the big money in mutual funds, in hedge funds, that are moving money and rotating money into various sectors, whether it's going to be on a big picture into equities versus bonds, into gold versus maybe other commodities. It is them that we want to follow. That's how you make money. When the trend changes, it could happen overnight. It could happen over a period of time, like what's going on right now. But you need to be aware of that. It can be a situation where it is bouncing back and forth like it did for a while inside of a zone. inside of a trading range, a consolidation area. Any of those are the same. Why does that happen? Well, because there are those that think that things are priced right. There are those that things that are priced high. There are those that things that are, think that they're priced low. Depending on where the money is and how much money is in any of those scenarios will depend on the movement of a market, a stock, a commodity, the futures. So when you see that there is a tremendous amount of movement off a certain level, there's a lot more people that are saying, hey, things are undervalued. When you see that there is a level of, well, this lack of any kind of real action, no real volume that comes in, and maybe even some complacency where things just will, you know, float higher, well, that's a sign that maybe there's some out there that are saying, hey, well, we're priced okay, I'm not really going to sell. There are some out there that say, hey, there's still some room to go, and therefore things press higher. Now, we did see also, and I think this is the most interesting thing, the VIX hit 17 on Friday. This is up from a low, up about 65% in the last few weeks from where the low was, something that we talked about for a while. We actually did, in fact, successfully hedge out some of the risk in portfolios using some of the VIX ETFs, which are notoriously, by the way, bad investments, especially if they're held for a very long time. When we have right now contango in the markets, in the VIX markets, that is, where the expectations are for it to be higher sometime in the future, what you have is these investments, whether it really doesn't matter, pick anyone that you want to look at, they don't do well because what's happening is that the role and the level that they're being bought out today and where it has to be bought out in the future, they don't work well. It just does not work well. So what happens is that you have a situation where you have a level of natural degrading of the underlying portfolio to the tune of maybe 1% per day right now. So the VIX has to really ramp up tremendously in order to make some money on that. Because if it's only up, let's say, 1% or 2% for a day, what happens? Well, you're not going to make any money. Because the natural course of those investments where we know that there's going to be contango and they know that the roles are going to really cost money overall are going to cause a major problem. This is why those particular investments, any of the VIX ETFs, are better on the long term to short. Now, there may be a period of time, like we just saw, where maybe for a week or 2 weeks or maybe even a month or maybe even 3 months, that it is better to be on the buy side of it where you're going to buy volatility. And in fact, these work out very well because the VIX is moving up dramatically. But once you see those very significant spikes on the VIX much higher, you see a 20, 25% day or maybe a few days where you see a 40% increase, that's when you want to look at selling volatility, going opposite, shorting volatility. And this goes not only for this market condition, but any market condition. When you see that you have this big spike, you hang on to it for a while, then you move out. Then what happens is you move back in, you short it, then you move back out of it again. Because if you hold on to these things for a period of time, there again is a natural degrading of the underlying portfolio that will provide a negative return naturally. Just look, put up a chart. Go and just take a look at a chart of VXX and see what has happened over time. Do a long-term daily chart and see what has happened on the underlying pricing of this instrument. It's awful. Absolutely awful. And the reason for this is because of the underlying design. And you have to be very careful if you think that you could just hold this and hedge. I'd rather you be in VIX options, or maybe a piece of the short S&P or short Russell or something else that doesn't have this kind of massive downside. It can be used, and we have used it in small amounts and increased it that brought it back and increased it and brought it back. As a matter of fact, on Friday morning, when the VIX was still spiking pre-market, when the markets were down pretty well, we reversed the trade and went into the short side and then picked up some of the profits there and then sold it, most of it by the end of the day. Because if we do have any kind of a move up right now, you will see these particular instruments, the VXX or UVXY or TVIX, you'll see them go down. There's no question about that. You'll see a major amount of the money leave those. And even if there are buyers, you'll see about a 1% downstroke compared to the VIX. You got to look at the VIX and the short-term VIX, not just the VIX. But you'll see that there will be a natural move lower for these, and therefore shorting or being on the other side of like an SVXY or SVXY, or shorting TVIX, shorting UVXY, shorting VXX, will be probably a better opportunity to make money than it would be to be on the side of the long VIX. Now, of course, just let's kind of get this all bottled up and straightened out. As the markets are coming down, and if they come down very quickly and there is a correction, it will be better to own them, obviously. But what I'm saying to you is, until the trend has been solidified on the downside, okay, what I want you to do is not be long large positions of this for long periods of time. If you're thinking about, well, markets are going to collapse here, well, I'd rather you be in something like maybe gold bonds, or maybe even short S&P futures, or possibly in the short ETF for the S&P, like an SH or short SPY. But until we do see that there is a significant drop that is not just news-driven, that is fundamentally focused on what is going on, there's a big sentiment change, economics really do start to slow down, and it's not simply just a one-move day due to, or maybe 2 or 3 days, that is dealing with just the news that's out there, you have to be very careful in investing in these particular instruments. Now, China, let's move over to China for a second here. China, we did see that the their manufacturing index has been doing better. As a matter of fact, it was a nine-month high last week. We saw that there is a pickup overall in this, and that is very good. Now, when you see that, that is a very good thing for the backdrop of the world, because China being one of the top and largest exports and importers around the world, this is something that you have to pay attention to. On the other hand, we also saw that the service index dropped. That's very interesting. We're seeing the service index really start to falter, but yet we're also seeing at the same time that the manufacturing index is increasing. A lot of that has to do with the way people are spending money. And the fact is that China has implemented, well, we call it a mini stimulus. Again, more infrastructure, really targeting real estate somewhat, really targeting the build-out of roads, highways, et cetera, and manufacturing. And with that, I think that we really have to realize that there is just seemingly no end to the stimulus that goes on around the world. And right now, one of the big things is that, you know, we're seeing that the U.S. is clearly slowing down on the stimulus, and it's starting to affect the rest of the world. But yet we're seeing that many pockets around the world, let's say that Europe and China, a lot of areas in Asia, as well as some areas in Latin America, are saying, hey, wait a minute, maybe it's time for us to do a little stimulus here. So we have the world at odds right now, where we had about a year ago, everybody was on the same, approximately a year ago, everybody was on the same page. So a big change in what's going on right now in terms of the overall stimulus factors, and that's probably one of the other reasons that things are really starting to get a little bit shaky in the underlying markets in the U.S. But I still think that the idea out there is that the U.S. is still showing a great deal of earnings capacity and benefit from stimulus. Also seeing that the overall economic factors that are in play have been really solid. So that being the case, we can't really argue all the things that are going on. Anyway, we're going to end it again short. It is the summer, and next week we have starting again with the regular programming, where we have some great guests coming on. We did have Frank Curzio last week, of course, but we're going to start some new guests that you haven't heard before and some new ideas. Of course, check out the things that are available on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and as well as the Aero strategy, which looks to go long, short, or neutral the markets, dependent on the overbought, oversold, and all the things in between. Is something that we manage for clients, $50,000 minimum. More to be found out over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, as well as the history and everything that you need to know about it. So check it out, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining me. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.